All right, hello everybody. This is Amit Hazan again with our third installation of the podcast from Puma Venture Capital. I'm excited to be joined today by Dr. Santiago Horgan. Dr. Horgan, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you doing? Nice hearing from you. Nice being in this podcast with Puma.
It's really exciting to have you. The topic of this podcast is going to be really a recap of the recent Society of Robotic Surgery conference that was held in Melbourne, Australia this week. But I thought what we could also do is introduce you, Santi, to our audience and our investors, because Santi is a venture partner for us, and he was one of the first venture partners that Vip and I went to see in those early days really what he thought about our idea, first of all, of having a venture fund that had a lot of involvement from surgeons. But then the immediate next question was, well, if you like it, will you join? And we're really glad that he's on board with us. And so, Santi, I thought what we could do is just tell people a little bit about yourself. They will tell from your accent you're weren't born here, so let's start with that. Where did you grow up? How did you get into medicine? Where did you go to medical school? What did you focus on? Let's go through a little bit of your background and get into your CV.
Awesome. Yes, I will. So I am from Argentina. Horgan is Irish. My grandfather was Irish. And I always joke that he got into the wrong boat and ended up in Argentina, not in New York. But the Argentinian born there and finished medical school in Argentina, did my residency in Buenos Aires, at University of Buenos Aires, and then came to the United States to do my fellowships at the University of Washington in Seattle many years ago. Many years ago. And I stay in the US. It's a story of people that come here and move from there to Chicago, and 18 years ago, came from California, San Diego, as a chief of MIS. Very involved with new technologies from day one. In 95, I was one of the first minimally invasive surgery fellows in the world at University of Washington. And in 2000, I bought a robotic system number 4 in the world. And I was involved since 2000 in developing robotic surgery in general surgery. Bip Patel and me joked that he was the leader in urology, clearly the father of robotic surgery. And I was the other side in general surgery. So we've been involved from day zero with robotic surgery. So it's nice to see the evolution of that platform to what it is today. Early developer of new technologies, I love new technologies, and that's why I love the idea of Puma. And I was delighted to join Puma because I think that has an amazing future.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear. And I think the validation of your comments we just heard this week when Fred Moll was on stage with you at some point and said that you were as much an entrepreneur of robotic surgery as he was in those early days. And for those that don't know, I mean, general surgery didn't really start to take off for Intuitive Surgical until maybe 2014, 2015. And here Santi's talking about being the first surgeon to start to use a robot in 2003, 2004, way ahead of his time. And certainly for me, as I was looking into Santi's background and thinking of him as part of the team, it was incredibly impressive to see that he's been early in a lot of these things. Santi, what's been your involvement with industry over those years?
Very, very involved, you know. With Intuitive, from very early, I bought the robot before FDA approval, and my first robotic surgery was in September of 2000. So very, very early, and that kind of in a way positioned me as a entrepreneur, a surgeon, and always involved with new technologies, very early in the game. And being one of those surgeons that can adapt to new technologies and embrace them. And that's what I'm known for in the market. And I always say that I'm having fun operating, trying new things, and helping patients, which at the end of the day is what we do. But you need surgeons that are willing to adopt new technologies, try them, and prove that they are good. And I think that has been a nice route for me.
Yeah, well, you seem like the perfect person to with that background to talk about the conference this past week, and so much going on in the world of robotic surgery. I think you and I both agree as ones who've gone to this show for a good number of years now, it's incredible if we kind of use the Society of Robotic Surgery Conference as our barometer. That's really all you need to know. The conference going from, maybe three companies attending, the first time that I went, just the big, J&J, Intuitive, and Medtronic, to having over 50 robotic systems, 50 companies, attending a show in Melbourne, Australia, which is not easy to get to. So that speaks a lot. So I think, I want to first ask you a very open-ended question. As you reflect, you were very involved in the show, very involved in a lot of the panels. Just give us your reflection on this event and what really stuck with you as you think about, and compare to prior SRSs you've been to. What's really been incremental as you think about it that stuck with you?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. And you know, when we thought about Melbourne, Australia, and we thought about coming to the meeting here and making the meeting in Australia, the question was who's going to go there? And I think that almost 1,300 participants came, and as you mentioned, over 50 new robotic platforms were here to either in vivo or presenting. Shows how this field is flourishing. I have never seen in the world any meeting like this one. This meeting exploded here in Melbourne. There was such a need for all these companies to be able to showcase what they have. And this society and this meeting allowed them to do that. And I think that when you look at the participation of the people coming to the meeting, the rooms were full every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's very rare to see that. I must confess myself that I usually go to one or two lectures in a meeting, and I was there all the time. It was impressive to hear, not only from users, but also from CEOs or chief medical officers of different companies presenting their technologies, and it was enlightening. I think that nobody expected how good this meeting was going to be. I'm sure that Beep did, because Beep is the genius behind all this, but it was overwhelming to see what the future is going to show. I think that, as you mentioned before, we all think about Intuitive and maybe Johnson & Johnson and Medtronic coming out and maybe one company from China. But here there were over 50 systems being shown for different things. Not only to be the primary surgeon, as a hybrid systems, as an assistant robotic systems, orthopedics, neurosurgery, endovascular surgery, endoscopic surgery systems. It was impressive. And really for someone like me who has pushed for 23 years robotic surgery, it's really a nice feeling to see this finally taking off. That's going to be a technology for everybody. Because something that came out of this meeting was that not every system needs to be a $5 billion system. You can have $100 million systems that work as well and or cheaper than that. I'm talking about $100 million companies, right? No systems. And I think that was something that came out of this meeting, that you know, there are going to be low-cost systems that will allow this technology to be used worldwide. Which now, outside of the US, the penetration of robotic surgery is very minimal. So I think that this is going to change the game. It's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction, Santi. I think just to reiterate a couple of the things that you said that really stuck with me. Number one is just the early opportunities in so many different specialties, you know, and I think that's part of how SRS has also evolved. They used to be more focused on just robotic surgery, and maybe even those early days, urology was such a focus, and then general surgery and gynecology, and that was kind of it. But here we were, and we're talking about, you know, orthopedics and spine and neuro and hip and shoulder starting to come on, and cardiology, where we made a recent investment, being represented. And there's just so many different specialties that are now just starting to experience the early availability of these technologies, or pre-approved status for these technologies coming into some of these specialties for the first time. That was important to see in one conference, and I think creates a great context for a lot of white space where good investments can be made, and a lot of room for adoption of the technology. But I was hoping, you know, we can come back to both your and my comment about how many companies and systems were there, and try to make a little bit of sense of that. You know, we have Intuitive, we have this one big company who's virtually a monopoly today, and we have all these other robotic systems that some of them look like Intuitive, some of them are multi-port, that some of them look exactly like Intuitive's multi-port, some of them look like Intuitive single port, and some of them don't look like, you know, that system at all, and have different objectives. So I'm curious if you kind of, you know, if you work your way through all those systems, you know, what your takeaways were, where you found excitement. I know I'm going to say for you that I don't think that you're looking for just another, you know, Intuitive system, although you said cost was important. So maybe you'll correct me on that, but tell me where you found excitement in all of the different companies and systems that you saw there.
Yes, I think that the, you know, there was a message sent through all the presentation, which is not every system needs to be an Intuitive system. That's not the only robot that should be in the market. That's not the only model. And you know, when you look at what was presented, yes, they are single card systems. Like Intuitive, they were multi card systems, but there were also those other systems that for example say, well, this is an open system. You can move from robotic to laparoscopic back to robotic without unscrubbing, being scrubbed and moving back and forth like you change instruments. It's an easy system, it's an easy platform to bring into the table, move around. There was another system where it says, we are not going to be a robotic system, we are going to be a robotic assistant. We help you be a solo surgeon by giving you a robotic assistant. There were other platforms that were endoluminal platforms. We still had the most archaic endoscopic systems in the world, and at this meeting, now we have robotic endoscopes and robotic colonoscopes. You know, this meeting and the presentations prove that there are going to be many, many options. That yes, Intuitive is an amazing company, without a question about that, but there's systems coming out that are going to compete head to head, that are going to open physicians' brains in believing that not every system needs to look like intuitive and needs to perform at the same level and do the same things. That we have systems for other things, systems that can only, for example, be used for hernias, or systems that are developed to do hysterectomies without the need to do everything. We don't have cars for everything. We have trucks, we have buses, we have compact cars, we have sport cars. So in this is what's happening in robotic surgery now. You are having a different system for different needs and at different costs. And for me, cost is an issue because when I see, for example, the penetration of robotic surgery in Latin America is less than 1%. And that penetration is not because they don't believe in robotic surgery, it's because the cost is not affordable in those countries. The penetration in Europe is also very limited. And I told you, China and India, Asia. And it's not because people don't believe in robotic surgery. It's because people cannot afford it. And in this meeting, we saw different platforms that are going to be less expensive and are going to be able to improve the surgeon skills and improve patient outcomes. So I think that was something that came out of this meeting very strong. And I think that that's going to show that robotic surgery can be used everywhere worldwide, not only in rich countries.
So let's touch on a few of the comments you made. Let's talk a little bit about these hybrid robotic lap systems, because they seem to be having a moment. And you and I were joking a little bit earlier about how you couldn't go back 7, 8, 9 years, and this was where Medtronic was probably planning to go. And we just haven't seen that develop from them. But now we have some interesting differentiated platforms that are emerging that can combine robotics and lap. Do you want to talk a little bit about those companies and which ones you think are interesting?
Yeah, there was this concept that you had to only do robotic surgery on laparoscopic, not a mix of them. And one of the issues with the robotic companies is that it's all or nothing. And what I mean by that is, if I'm going to use the intuitive robot, I need to use the intuitive staplers. I need to use the intuitive advanced energy. They are not open to adapt other technologies from other companies that may do them better. So what these hybrid robotic systems did is they say, well, you don't need my staple developed by me. You can use a staple developed by the big companies, and you can interact with them like the iPhone. The iPhone doesn't develop every app. You buy other apps. So for example, to name some, Distal Motion, Dexter allows you to move between laparoscopic and robotic as needed for that specific part of the operation without making that a big task. So you can abandon the robot, go back to laparoscopic surgery, use your instruments you need for that, and come back to robotic and go back and come back and use the robot for what the robot is good for, not for everything. Because you have to be committed. And that's a different concept. It's a hybrid concept. And I think that is the best concept, because then you can use the best devices that are available for that specific part of the operation, and not only devices made by that robotic company, which not always are the best. So that came out very clear in this meeting. And then there are other systems like Moon Surgical, where they say, well, we're going to give you an assistant surgeon that will, using AI, control the camera to follow your instrument and be your assistant instrument. So you can operate alone And now you have a robotic platform helping you. Well, that's very good for surgery centers, for outpatient surgery centers, for surgeons who don't have help. Obviously, I have a lot of help because at an academic center, we have fellows and residents, but that's not true for 80% of the country or of the world, where surgeons are depending on assistance to help. And this company is coming out with a nice concept of saying, hey, you can have a consistent assistant by having this robotic system helping you. Very interesting if you look at it from that angle.
Yeah, you think about the timing too. I mean, we're not talking about that far away when these systems become available. I think Distal Motion with Dexter are targeting next 2 years for FDA approval. Moon Surgical targeting 2024 for a launch. So even sooner. And so I want to ask you the practical question, you know, using your, you know, the Apple type of analogy. And one of the things is that at least you've got, you know, with Apple, you've got an operating system that's common to all, you know, the apps work with. And here, you know, these are still there. Everything is, you know, its own standalone, you know, operating system, if you will. And so if you think about a place where you operate at UCSD, you know, how do you think about integration of these products into what is already a very large existing, you know, intuitive robotic platform that I'm sure is going nowhere? You'll continue to use it. So how does everything work together in a world after these are approved?
And that's an awesome question and a difficult one to answer, but you know, as costs go down and as a system develop a financial model where you don't pay for the capital equipment but you pay for utilization of the equipment only, that will allow hospitals like UC San Diego and others to adopt this technology because you don't need to do a major capital investment. And I think that that's very smart from all these companies.
Santi, you there?
They can operate together at the same time. Well, that would be a dream, but we're already thinking about that. You know, can you use two robots at the same time? Well, I think that in the future you will be able to do that. But what I see is hospitals being a lot smarter in saying, okay, you can use this robot for this operation because this robot is more expensive, but it's needed for this operation. But if you're going to do an inguinal hernia, you don't need a Da Vinci. You can use another robot that was developed for outpatient surgery that doesn't need staplers and doesn't need a lot of advanced energy and can be a more sustainable system. So that was very clear in this meeting. It's going to happen, and that will allow these companies to penetrate the market and be able to interact in the hospital with Intuitive, who is the superstar today.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. If you could imagine those systems being installed, is there some form of standardization that you would like to see? I mean, do they need to operate together necessarily, or could things work well with each of these operating independently? Would you like to see kind of a similar, you know, for lack of a better term, operating system for these types of products that comes on top of all of them? Or is it okay to keep them independent?
No, you know, they are going to be independent because you cannot at this time integrate them, but the operating platform for all of them is very similar. So something that is clear that when we look at 40 robotic systems, switching from one to the other is not a major learning curve for the surgical team or the nurses in the operating room. And I think that that's very important, that surgeons can switch from one system to the other like we switch cars. You know, there's not a big learning thing. And And something that they have done really well is make sure that they don't deviate too much from the original system. That you know, the foot pedal, the consoles, the where you were the instruments is all pretty much the same. So in that sense, I'm confident that will not be a problem. And as I said earlier, the ones that will integrate these systems are the digital solutions. Companies that can integrate all these systems and help them work together, like Stryker does or Proximie or G&J in her digital platform that they are building, where you can integrate the information coming from the stapler to the energy device to from the robot. And work with it and try to see how you can improve the workflow in the operating room, which I think that's the next future.
Right. Still some form of consolidation, probably, where someone can integrate these different types of capital equipment for the right surgeries. So we're not going to have just one type of robot. We're going to have a number of options for you as surgeons that you can use under some umbrella. Is
Correct.
kind of probably a good guess for how the future might look. But I think
I
the
think so.
other, yeah, I agree. I think the other takeaway that we were alluding to earlier is just this idea of non-invasive as the next frontier. That seems to be having more of a moment every year. And there was a lot of discussion about that natural orifice and just a non-invasive surgery, and EndoQuest Robotics comes to mind. I mean, they really stand out to me as being more mature every year and really looking like they're positioned well to target those new markets or new approaches. But do you want to just talk about that area and what your reaction was at the show to what was happening there relative to what you've seen in the past?
Yes, you know, this is a great question. I was the first in the country to remove the appendix in a patient from the mouth. Patient with acute appendicitis, we did surgery through the mouth and we removed the appendix. And that was called NOTES surgery, natural orifice surgery, operating from the mouth or the vagina or the anus. Did not evolve as fast as we wanted because there was no technology available and we were just using off-the-shelf endoscopes. So it was very demanding for the surgeons and the teams. And now you have a platform like EndoQuest that says, hey, we believe in endoluminal surgery. Not every gastric tumor needs to end up with a total stomach removed or not any colonic tumor or tumor in the colon need to be undergoing a total colectomy or a partial colectomy. You can remove them from the inside. But to do that, you need to be able to suture and dissect and mobilize tissue. And what EndoQuest did, they said, okay, I'm going to bring you robotic surgery into the endoscope. And they are evolving so fast, and they're already starting FDA trials. In the US, they have experience clinically in Brazil and Chile already. So it's a company that is bringing back something we did and some of us continue doing, but it's bringing back the concept of you can operate from the inside if we give you the right technology. And that's what they have done. And when you see the last 3 or 4 years, how they are evolving, it's pretty amazing. So I think that's an area of that is going to evolve even more. There are other platforms that are developing. And I think that the acceptance was massive in this meeting. Everybody agree that these systems need to be here now that are going to be a differentiator in terms of comparing them with Intuitive, and then targeting a different problem. There were other companies like Galaxy or Eon talking about, end of bronchial surgery inside the lung to try to target these tumors that are difficult to identify, diagnose, etc. There are three endo bronchial systems already approved by the FDA. So this is here to stay. And really it's very nice to see that we're exploring other venues for robotic surgery, not only soft tissue.
Yeah, and you were referring to Intuitive with the Ion, J&J with Monarch, and Noah Medical with Galaxy.
Correct.
Noah's being kind of the earliest stage one, but it's US approved, as you mentioned. And I think they said they've treated about 40 patients, so they're on their way. And I think EndoQuest is hoping to get on the market in 2025. So we're no longer talking about these things being far away. I mean, they're here.
They are
Do
on the
you,
corner.
yeah, and I don't know if you saw anything else at the show that you'd mention, or even with, these flexible endoscope companies or products like Ion, Monarch, and Galaxy. Clearly, those are going to go into other markets. J&J has been talking about kidney stones for a few years now, and I think they've made progress there. It seems Intuitive, excuse the pun, that Intuitive is heading towards the Ion product for colonoscopy. What do you think about those products and what they might be able to do, kind of less on the diagnostic side and more potentially on the treatment side?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to try all of them, and I look at the future, and I know they are working on it. They're working on flexible platforms. They have to be working on flexible platforms to be able to use the technology that they developed to move the instruments to do diagnosis in the lung, to be able to move the instruments to do treatment. So this is just the beginning. We are seeing, we are not seeing under the hood. I can guarantee, without using the magic ball, that Intuitive, J&J, and Galaxy has something else going on, and that's very healthy, because those technologies are incredible technologies that now have been used only for the lung, but I would say it's a testing ground. It has been adopted very well, and you can modify that technology into making those instruments available to operate and treat diseases. So that is a kind of solidifying what EndoQuest is doing. That now we only have four or five FDA-approved companies for endoluminal diagnosis of surgeries, and that's pretty incredible. And that's going to be the way this is going to evolve. With these companies using what they know and their know-how and their IPs to move it to the next level. So, I'm very excited about what's coming.
Yeah, so I want to touch on just two or three more areas, and then we'll bring it to a close. The first one is just AI. It's everywhere these days. So you have to ask the question, and I think Andrew Hung had a great presentation, and I'm sure you were exposed to it in other aspects of the conference. What comes to mind for you as you think about AI and surgery and where we are today and where it might be heading?
Yeah, without the question, is a huge need for us. The concept that AI will be, or machine learning will be, a system that will make surgeons not operate anymore and have the robot operating, that's way, way far away. But what AI is going to do in the OR is improve patient flow. Improve patient outcomes by being able to recognize the right treatment at the right time, to help surgeons navigate the surgery and say, okay, at this time, under these conditions, most of the surgeons will do this, and be able to tell the surgeon what the right decision is. And they will help integrate the operating room. I have a smart home. My OR is not smart OR. I have more technology integrated in my house that I have in the operating room. And we have a brand new hospital in San Diego. But the ORs are all these technologies that are all uncoordinated. They don't talk to each other. And what AI is going to do is bring them together. And for example, an easy example saying, hey, Dr. Horgan, the blood pressure is high right now. Stop operating to avoid bleeding. We learn about this after the facts. And if we have a system alerting me when I'm operating that the blood pressure is high, and to do this or to do that simple task is going to help, is going to improve a lot. Telling us the patient temperature is dropping, you need to do something. Being alert, without waiting for the human interaction, which sometimes can be delayed. So I think that patient outcomes are going to improve because of that. Because we are bringing all this knowledge from the outside world that is being used in planes and other things into the operating room to help surgeons. And that's A is critical, and B is super needed.
Pre-op planning, intra-op navigation. There's a lot going on here, and it's going to be interesting. We know a good number of companies working in this space on very interesting technologies in their early stage, but I imagine we'll see them integrated into these systems slowly, slowly. We here too. We're not that far away from starting to see the realization of some of these technologies in practice.
Absolutely.
The other point I think that we have to make, we did our last podcast with Vip about his trip to China, and so we got a good amount of information from him on his experience with the systems there. But man, this SRS conference was a coming out show for them. I don't recall seeing them in anywhere near the presence that they were at this show. So we get a chance to ask you what you thought about the China manufacturers, if you got a chance to play with those systems, just what your overall reaction was to the Asian cohort of systems that were there at the show.
Yes, I was amazed at what they presented. We always talk about the Chinese systems. No one was able to put a hand on them. And now they are here in Melbourne, and we are sitting on the systems and saying, wow, they did perform. They're really good. I look at details about the system, friction, overshooting, etc., and they are really good. I mean, these are real systems. When you look at the cost of these systems, they were extremely cheap to manufacture by them. But they are real. And something that they have focused a lot because of needs in China is in telesurgery. So all these systems were designed to operate from far away because that's a huge need in China. And I think that Bip tried them and did a couple of telesurgeries himself with no delay. So that's a game changer for countries that need telesurgery. It's making this real because they are using 5G bandwidth, not anything special. And the system do perform. They are going to be extremely cheap. They were talking about $50, $60 an instrument. It is going to be the price of this system. They are going to overtake the market because they are performing. I mean, I sat on three of them, and I can operate tomorrow on patients as well as I can operate with Intuitive, and I'm not making this up. So it was exciting to see them coming out. They have two, three consoles, six arms. You can adapt to one arm, two arm, three arm, four arms. Some of them are one console, two consoles. They can interact. Tons of cameras. I mean, it's pretty impressive what they brought to the table in Melbourne. And to prove that they are real and they are not something in a video, they are real, and in the hands of advanced surgeons with robotics, they perform very well, which was impressive.
Yeah, and we heard something very similar from Vip Santi. So you're the list is starting to grow of individuals, experienced surgeons who are saying the same thing about the kind of the strength of those systems versus what we all might have expected. I want to just hit one last thing and just ask you out of curiosity. I mean, J&J is the biggest medical technology in the world, company in the world, so we have to ask about them. And think about where their heads are at and where they're going. And I have to say, here again, one more year goes by, and I was very unimpressed. We just did not hear much, and here we are talking about all these systems and possibly coming to market in the next 1, 2, or 3 years, and we didn't even get a chance to see where J&J is with their program that they first announced in 2015. So, what do you make of this? What do you think J&J is? How do you think about them and their direction in robotic surgery?
Yeah, they are a great company, and when a company is too quiet, it's because something is happening. So I am optimistic that they will come up with something soon. It's hard for me to believe that they have nothing going on. They were very quiet. They had good presentations. They did mention Ottava many times in the presentations, so we know that exists. We just need to be a little more patient. But Medtronic has a system. Hugo was all over the place at the meeting and very well received by every surgeon that sat on it. And I think that J&J being quiet means, in my view, that something is happening. Otherwise, they will be talking to try to make some noise, and seeing that then they are going to surprise us at all. I sure hope that they do, and they do have digital solutions. They have CSATs, and they're working on some digital options. Yes, it was quiet, but I think that quiet in my mind means there's something going on. We just need to wait.
Yeah, well, and in fairness to them, they did say more info is coming in the second half of 23.
Correct.
But
Correct.
I still feel, my kind of honest reaction is we just saw a lot more from so many companies, small and big, that at this conference, as big as it was and important as it was, we just didn't seem to see it yet. But maybe you're right. Maybe they've got something coming. We'll have to wait and see. And maybe we'll close with the comment you made on Medtronic and just see what you thought about Hugo if you got a chance to play with it and sit on it. It was available since it is approved in Australia. It was at the show. What's your experience been like, and how do you imagine, as in the coming year or two, as they get approval in the US, how do you imagine that system does?
I got the chance to be on the system before Melbourne, so I have experience with the system before, and it performs really well. It's surprising. People always say, the arms are big and this and that, but when you are sitting at the system and you're operating, you don't realize it's a system that doesn't perform. You realize very quickly that it performs as well as other systems. You can operate the system work really well. And I think that when they can bring their best technologies, you know, advanced energy and staplers, they are going to have a lot of attraction. Because we all want G&G Ametronics to allow us to use their technologies in the robot. You know, we love the staplers. We love their advanced energy devices, and they are not available today with Intuitive. We have to use Intuitive staplers, which, to be fair, not everybody likes. Now, no one questions Ethicon or Medtronic staplers. We all love them. And nice that these robotic companies, Hugo or Otava, are going to bring staplers. They are going to be a game changer in the market. You know, the Chinese companies, for now, they don't have staplers, but they are going to come out with some stapling technologies. I'm sure about that. So if you have Medtronics and G&J platform with their own staplers, they are going to be adopted very quickly.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I'm waiting to see too. I've been surprised a little bit by the China companies and how well they seem to be received by you folks, the early stage folks that are. And I know from Intuitive that, you know, something like the staplers is one of the most challenging technological feat that they have had to overcome. And so it will be interesting to see if J&J and Medtronic are able to be successful there, and if the other companies are able to be more successful in a faster time frame than what we saw from Intuitive, who took them some time to get that right. So as I
Correct.
think about, you know, if we recap the show, Santi, or the event in total and what we talked about, I think non-invasive is the next frontier, one big takeaway for sure. A lot of systems at the show, a lot of them different than Intuitive, and these hybrid robotic lab systems really having more of a moment. That was definitely another takeaway. We talked about the very early opportunities in different specialties as being another takeaway with spine, neuro, cardio, shoulder, hip, other areas that are just very early stage or really at zero. We talked a little bit about AI and that being more present at the show than it has been in the past and becoming more of a reality. We talked about the China systems having their moment. Talked a little bit about the big boys, J&J and Medtronic. Anything else come to mind that we didn't cover?
No, I think that we cover everything. I think that the message is this meeting, this here in Australia, have proved that robotic surgery is growing at a pace that we never imagined it was going to grow. That China is very alive and is going to compete very well with Intuitive and G&J and Medtronics. And I think that competition is something very healthy and going to bring the costs of these systems down. You know, I always mention this. When I bought my first plasma TV in 2003, I paid $8,000 and it was 42 inches. And today we buy a better 4K TV for $300. I bought my first Intuitive robot for $750,000. Today the robot is 2 million. That makes no sense. The robot should be below $1 million, and I think that these Chinese companies, this competition is going to bring costs down. And by doing that, it's going to allow for the market to have more penetration. And I think that that's very healthy for inpatient care, to be able to be more affordable. And so I think that this meeting proved that the systems are going to come out, that the cost is going to go down, and the times of only one player in the game are gone. There are going to be many players, and very quickly, which was something that we were all surprised by seeing with how much human experience these Chinese companies have. Because all of them have done hundreds of cases with good outcomes, and I think that that's very good.
I'm going to give you the last word on that, Santi. That was terrific recap, and thank you for all of those that are listening. As always, we really appreciate you. And if you have any questions for me or for Santi, let us know. We're here to help you, and if we can clarify anything or if anything of interest comes up, just let me know. I'll get it to Santi, and we'll get an answer for you. And otherwise, everyone can continue to enjoy your summer, and we'll talk to you again soon on the next podcast.